In Noel Coward's comedy Private Lives, a divorced couple, Amanda and Elliot, find themselves honeymooning with their new spouses in adjacent rooms at a hotel in the south of France. And that's just the beginning of a very wild ride. The play premiered on Broadway in 1931. It's been revived a half dozen times since then. And the latest revival at the Music Box Theater stars Kim Cattrall and Paul Gross, and I'm very pleased to welcome both of them to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
Hi there.
Kim, to many people, you'll always be Samantha Jones from Sex and the City. Do you try to choose roles that are clearly not Samantha?
It's been a real process since the series ended in 04. And it was quite an interesting time at the end of that, for me personally and professionally. And I think one of the things that was in my mind was to take different challenges than Samantha had been, because I felt that to play that character or a character like that, the writing that we had and the ensemble that we had was at such a really high level. And I thought to repeat it at a lower level wouldn't be very much of a challenge or really fun to do. So I started to, I was offered a lot of work actually outside of the United States.
So you've been working, in fact, in London a lot.
Yes, I was born in England and I grew up in Canada. And so I had some friends and some connections and people who had seen me do different things. I'd worked for the National Theater in a production of Wild Honey in the 80s, which was when I first came to Broadway. So it was really interesting to sort of get back into that kind of scene and groove and make those kind of decisions based on what productions were happening in London at the time.
You speak with a British accent in the play. Did you as a child, or were you in Canada too young for that?
Well, I left when I was about 3 months old, but I didn't have any accent and didn't speak at all. But I went back in the 60s, and I lived there for a couple of years with my great aunt, who was an elocution teacher. And I spoke very much. My father has a very strong Liverpool accent. And my mother got rid of hers because, you know, when she was growing up, your accent really dictated what you could or could not do. So she would listen to the BBC every night and took a couple of elocution lessons. But my great aunt, I left with a received pronunciation accent, which is that, you know, the Queen's English. And when I came back to Canada, I wasn't very popular, especially with my brothers and sisters.
Well, you unlearn it very quickly. I went to school in London for a year, and I came back with a kind of a modified American-British accent, and people looked at me strangely when I pronounce words correctly in England, mispronounce them here.
And, yes, like schedule instead of schedule.
You stop right away. Paul, you're also a Canadian. People will remember you from the TV shows Slings and Arrows and Due South. Have you done a lot of theater?
Yeah, I haven't done much, an awful lot of theater in the last while. The last play I did was actually 10 years ago. I did Hamlet in Stratford in Ontario.
Well, that's not bad.
Yeah.
With a British accent?
No,
Canadian.
Did it completely, sounded like this, I thought. but I did a lot of theater when I was younger. And then I just kind of got siphoned off, I suppose, in the film and TV stuff. But it has been a great joy to return to it again after a hiatus, because it's, for me, I think it's the conversation with the audience every night is something I really missed, and actually didn't realize how deeply I missed it until we started doing Private Lives in front of people again.
And this is your Broadway debut then.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you're doing a leading role in a Broadway play, so that's that has to be pretty exciting.
Yeah, it was very exciting, except there's something I had no idea what to expect. I mean, I've been to lots of theater on Broadway, but I've never performed here, obviously. And I'm not really sure what I thought it would be. And then I think I've sort of discovered that theater's a little bit like Freemasonry. It doesn't kind of matter where you are. You know, you step into a theater, I might as well be in Bogota or Barcelona. It's all very similar.
Although,
but it's great to go to work on 45th, and there are all those theaters and all those people working. It's really exciting.
Mm-hmm. Although, Kim, British actors tell me that New York theatergoers react differently to the same plays. Now, you've done this in London. Then you moved to Toronto, and now you're here. Do you get the laughs on the same lines?
The similarity of the laugh seems to be around sex and religion and politics. more religion. Paul gets a huge laugh every night when I say, do you realize we're living, I have a line as Amanda, do you realize we're living in sin? And he says, not according to the Catholics. And in every three, all three cities, that was one of the huge laughs of the show. And me not growing up with really any religion, I thought, why is that so funny? And then, of course it's funny. I found in England, I think because I was a little more nervous about it, also doing a British accent on the stage in the West End as a Canadian, was a little scary at first. But I found them to be a little more reserved, especially at the end of the performance in Canada and in Toronto and now in New York. There's I think, much more of a give as far as the response of, at the end of the show and throughout the show.
Richard Eyre direct all three productions?
Yes, he did, yeah.
And there still has to be some other kind of change just simply because theaters are different. And in the case of this production, Paul joined in Toronto?
Yes.
In Toronto, yeah.
So that I don't know whether that affected your performance.
Oh, it really did. It affected everything. It was interesting because in the first production, it was a feeling of two opposites. And in this production, I really feel that there's more of a kindred spirit, you know, these two free spirits, as opposed to someone who was very restrained and held on and was controlling, and someone who is also could explode and be unpredictable on a nightly basis. So I think that's the major change.
Now, Paul, in the first production, Noel Coward played the part you're playing in the original West End and Broadway productions. Richard Burton played it opposite Liz Taylor. Alan Rickman played it here in the 2002 Broadway version. And every one of those Elliots is quite different. And your Elliot is different again.
Yeah, I hope so.
I'm
just thinking about the part itself. Does it lend itself to totally personalizing?
Yes, I think so. I think there's something very interesting about Coward's writing. He wasn't a playwright that I had any particular affinity for until we started working on this, and I think he's one of those playwrights who's probably quite a bit better than even he thought he was, that's due or is in the process of being kind of rediscovered. And what I found...
Well, he knew how to structure a play.
Absolutely. This play is
almost the mechanics perfectly of assembled. Playwriting.
Yeah. Yes. And because he was a performer, he knew how to make it easy for an actor to move from one moment in the play to the next. And I think what I kind of discovered, Richard steered, obviously, and Kim with her familiarity with it, it became clear that the tune and the rhythm and the musical score of Coward was really important. When you're inside that, on his rhythm, I find it somewhat effortless. And then once you're in there, it's extraordinarily pliable inside. There's an awful lot of variation that you can put into it. Mm-hmm. And I think that the character of Elliot lends itself to that because he's essentially an anarchist, I think. He understands terribly well what the silhouette of upper-class 1930s Englishman ought to be, but he doesn't really care about it that much. So he can look like it, but inside it's all just coming apart.
Well, this is at the beginning of the Depression. Is that even an undercurrent in this play?
I don't think so.
No.
I don't think he lived in a world of that kind of reality.
He wouldn't even be aware of that. Well, in your case, Kim, Amanda has been portrayed by some pretty famous people.
Daunting,
Gertrude
yes.
Lawrence, Tallulah Bankhead, Elizabeth Taylor, Maggie Smith, Lindsay Duncan won a Tony for it in 2002. Is this a part that you had wanted to play in the past?
No. It's a part that a play that I really enjoyed reading in theater school and had seen Maggie Smith do it, actually, at Stratford, Canada. And I had seen Lindsay Duncan do it with Alan Rickman beautifully. And this whole Private Lives experience has been really just by chance, or chance, as we say on a nightly basis. I was supposed to do an Ibsen play with Richard Eyre and in the West End last year. And there was another production that cropped up, and they got a theater before we did. So the producers... Duncan Weldon and Paul Elliott, they have the rights to Private Lives. So they called our reps and said, we hear that, you know, they're they're looking for a property, or they must be looking for a property because they can't do that. So they send us Private Lives. And
well, you can't have a bigger difference in tone
you
from
really
Ibsen
can't.
To Noel Coward.
And it was Ghosts, Ibsen's Ghosts, which is, you know, really dark and dangerous. And so to go from the darkness to the light really within a couple of days was a huge leap for both of us. And Richard had never done a Coward, and he said, I never really liked it. I never felt that I could access it in any way. So we started on this journey sort of by happen chance, really.
And are you learning more and more about Amanda? Because you've been doing it for a while now.
Yes, I am. I mean, Paul was such an amazing addition to the company, and Anna Madeley as well, and Simon Paisley Day, who was originally the Victor. It's really, really completed so much of what were still unanswered questions. Well, we had a very short run, too. I mean, our run is much longer, which is really exciting. We had a much shorter rehearsal period. It was just amazing how Paul and Anna grabbed onto this with such velocity and energy. It was really incredible. I've never seen anything like it. So it's been gosh, altogether, I guess about 8 months now that I've been doing it, and I find it every night to be exciting, and it really is like grabbing onto a fast moving train.
This is what people don't understand about acting. They think, well, you're doing the same part night after night after night. It has to be boring. But actors all say, every night is a new adventure.
It's kind of like surfing, isn't it? It's mm-hmm. We're especially in the second act, which is an extraordinarily constructed act in the sense that it's just Paul and I till the very, very end. And the waves that we go through and the build that we go through, and the audience is part of that on a nightly basis.
My guests are Kim Cattrall, Paul Gross, two of the stars of Private Lives, now at the Music Box Theater on Broadway on West 45th Street. And it's the 80th anniversary of this play. 1931.
It is. Oh my God.
It doesn't feel that old, does it? When the play opens, Amanda and Elliot are seen with their respective spouses, Victor and Sybil, on adjoining balconies in the hotel in Deauville, France. Does the audience realize pretty quickly that these two marriages aren't going to last?
I think it's impossible not to. I mean, I think that's also... I think that the fascinating thing about the structure of the play is that Coward sets it up as a very kind of... slightly stodgy but very predictable farce, so that you have these two ex-spouses with their brand new spouses on adjoining balconies. And it's clear that everything is not perfect in these marriages, the new marriages, but they're certainly going to make a go of it. And then they see one another. So you're anticipating a flat-out kind of bedroom farce, and then he just spins it. And so the second act that Kim was talking about gets completely modern and nuts. And then the third act goes into kind of a zany world that is
yes.
almost impossible to describe. It sort of goes into Monty Python.
It does. It does.
Yeah.
Well, they had a stormy three-year marriage, which ended 5 years before. Mm. But it's obvious right from the start that these people are still deeply in love.
Mm. Yeah, yes. Their orbits, if they're in one another's orbits, they are going to be together. And as
yes,
soon as they're
attractive.
Together, it's warfare.
Although
yes.
you're not sure whether it's obsessive love or lust. For
what's the difference?
They go hand in hand, don't they?
Both of them, their initial reaction is to get away, and they unsuccessfully try to convince their new spouses to leave the hotel. So they also remember why they broke up. I mean, they do not want to fall back into that situation.
Yeah, so there's a great deal of conversation between the two of them about how not to explode.
Yes.
We'll have these catchphrases that we'll use, and that's timeout.
Timeout.
And we won't talk about certain things. And
yes.
But of course, they fail.
But they can't stop. It's like it's too delicious. You can't stop yourself.
There's a lot of physical comedy in this play, even some violence. You have a fight director for this production?
Yes, we did.
No, we improvised that, Kim. Yeah, we know.
How difficult was that to choreograph?
Well, Paul is really good at fights. He's amazing. He's done a lot in films and things like that.
Because we're talking about a very light production, and yet it's an abusive relationship.
Well, he's a wife
levels.
Beater. That was one of the reasons that Paul said yes to this. Remember that conversation?
When I first talked to Sir Richard Eyre, the Knight of the Realm, he said, I imagine you have some reservations about it. And I said, well, I kind of do. And he said, well, let me guess what they might be. I would suggest the first one is coward. And I said, well, it is. It's just, as I said earlier, a character I don't have, a playwright I'm not any great affinity for. And he said, well, just read it as if it were a brand new play. And as you read it, bear in mind that he's a wife beater. And then it does completely change what you feel about it. And the undertones.
Was it shocking in 1931, do you think?
I think it must have been.
It's even a bit shocking today.
Well, some of the things are outrageous that he says, and I bet they were outrageous then, maybe in slightly different contexts. But, I mean, I do say at one point to Kim, certain women ought to be struck regularly like gongs. I mean, that's pretty...
Yes, and then you say dark. To Sybil, I'd like to cut off your head with a meat axe. Yeah, you know, this is really... I mean, but that's what attracted you to it at the same time.
Well, it's not just like comedy.
Yeah.
You actually have a character who has problems.
Yes. Yeah. But, you know, I think back then, wife-beating was something that happened but wasn't really talked about. And now it is. I think much more now people are much more sensitive to that.
But I think what also makes it relatively almost bearable in a contemporary framework is that Samantha... Or,
Hello!
Yikes.
Amanda.
Amanda gives...
She's done that a couple of times.
She gives as good as she gets, you know.
Yes.
Well, this is a limited engagement until February 5th. Is it possible we'll see an extension?
If
a whole lot of people go, yeah.
Yes.
We have ticket information on our show page. It's at the Music Box Theater at 239 West 45th Street. And my great thanks to Kim Cattrall and Paul Gross for stopping by to talk about it on our show.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.